How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is February 26, 2013, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Obviously, we got Raw to talk about tonight, and we have a main event for WrestleMania. It is John Cena versus The Rock for the WWE title. John Cena beat CM Punk in the main event of Raw. Hell of a match. No Undertaker. Presumably, that's coming up in the next week or so. I guess we'll see. But between that and the Brock Lesnar segment, some good interviews on the show. I enjoyed Raw.
Yeah, the first and last segments were excellent. The as far as the rest of the show, I don't think there was really too much to it. It was okay, but the main event was really good. So they gave him a lot of time, and it was an excellent match. First segment was great. So yeah. I mean, overall, I guess between that, I mean, the money segments were excellent, so it was a successful show.
All right, the show opened up with, we talked this weekend about some changes taking place to the Raw script. This was apparently one of them. They moved Brock and Triple H and Vince and Paul to the opening of the show. And Vince came out on crutches, called out Heyman for their fight. This week, Paul was confident that he could take this man out with one hip. They're still claiming Vince had hip replacement surgery. I guess that's the official storyline now. And 3 weeks away from getting hip surgery, Vince took a bump. Paul speared him. Vince fell down. Paul started beating the crap out of him. Vince ended up grabbing the crutch that Paul was beating him with and waffled Heyman with it. And then Brock Lesnar's music hit. And Vince did the big gulp. And Brock came down to the ring. Place was going nuts. And Triple H's music hit. So this gave Vince a chance to bail out of the ring. Hunter did his whole entrance. Got down there to ringside. Big brawl. In the melee, Brock got sent headfirst into the post. And he hit that post. Busted wide open. Bunch of staples after the show. I believe 16.
12.
12. And staples all over, blood all over, and Hunter went after him. They had a brawl. Brock actually gave Hunter an FU onto the table. They ended up back into the ring, and Hunter made a comeback, hit Brock with a chair shot. Brock bailed, and it was a hell of a brawl, and Brock is always awesome. Hunter did his job here, and looks like your main event for semi-main event, one of the main events for WrestleMania is on with Brock versus Triple H 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great segment.
I think that Brock's music, I don't know if I ever mentioned this, but it's just perfect for Brock Lesnar. It's just perfect. That music hits and everybody just goes crazy that this wild man is coming out. And every time he's on TV, it's been great. So this was an awesome segment.
Mm-hmm.
We had Ryback versus Dolph Ziggler. Three guesses what happened. They had a long match. Ziggler bumped all over the place. Ryback pinned him with a shell shock. There was a spot in there where Big E laid out Ryback. I don't know if maybe they're going to actually do that match at WrestleMania. I don't know. But another big loss for our boy Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing when you think about Dolph Ziggler and AJ, where they were, you know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, and where they are now. It's, you know, just as far as, like, position on the card and position on television and everything, I mean, they're really, you know, they, you know, no interview time, no push at all, no direction at all, you know, just kind of there, putting people over. I mean, Ziggler did a good job of putting Ryback over, I mean, but just, you know, his fortunes just don't seem to be, I don't know, just doesn't seem to be much for him. But I mean, for a long Ryback match on television, it was pretty good. It was as good as you're probably going to get. I mean, there's no real problems with it. There was one real long vertical suplex spot, and I don't know how long it was because he already was holding him up when they came back from a commercial and just held him up for a long time after that.
They should have claimed he was held up the entire commercial.
Yeah, I guess.
We had a CM Punk interview where he called himself God. It's basically a promo about how this night wasn't about WrestleMania, wasn't about Rock, wasn't about Cena, wasn't about the title. It was all about him.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it was a hell of a promo, all things
really?
Considered.
I don't know. Promo didn't do anything for me. I mean, the line about God was cool and all, but I mean, and I'm a fan of Punk's promos, but this one just, I don't know. Just thought there was something lacking there.
We had the announcement that Donald Trump is going into the WWE Hall of Fame. He obviously was part of the biggest WrestleMania of all time with Vince in the hair match. And now he's going into the celebrity wing. Wonder what Bruno's got to say about this. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, that video or whatever the announcement, I don't know exactly what happened because the announcement was scheduled for last week's show. And then I don't know if they didn't have time for it last week or what, or there was a late problem and they just cleared it up and made it this week. But
well, they had plenty of time this week because there were movie packages segments. And movie packages and more movie packages.
Oh, the movie packages.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there was a lot of movie packages, a lot of movie commercial stuff. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's political politically and everything. You know, it's probably not. I don't know. It's kind of tone deaf. But you know, Trump was, as far as a celebrity that really actually, you know, was a difference maker in WWE. I mean, he really was. That WrestleMania was, you know, it did draw more pay-per-view buys than any WrestleMania ever, and he and Vince were the reason. So, you know, at least, I mean, you know, it's better than, like, Drew Carey or somebody like that. They just put in because they happen to have, like, something or other coming out that week, and they wanted publicity. I mean, Trump always has something, but at least it's, if you're going to do a celebrity, at least do a celebrity that actually was a mover in a sense, and a player in a sense when it comes to wrestling and its history.
We had Mark.
God, you know, I don't know. At the same time, I mean, Trump was such a joke this year. I mean, it's almost like from a political standpoint, it's like, do you really want to be associated with him? You know, I don't know.
Well, speaking of politics, actually, we'll get to that after the great Khali and Mark Henry. Not much to it. Mark Henry beat him. It was short. It was ugly.
But at least it was short.
Very ugly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy, I mean, I mean, the only good thing is they kept it, under 90 seconds. But, oh, my God. Wow. Wow, was that ugly.
So then we had Miz TV with Swagger and Zeb Coulter and Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez all out there, and did the long promo. Zeb Coulter went on and on about Mexicans coming to this country, illegals, he called them, stealing people's jobs.
Criminals.
What was that?
Criminals.
Criminals, stealing these people's jobs, and I gotta say that Zeb Coulter, that guy can play this character. That guy can talk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's always been, he's always been a good talker, and he was really good here. As far as it was, he was really good. They were in Dallas, which was a place where it really should have gotten tremendous heat. It really didn't. It felt very out of place after a few minutes. Del Rio was kind of there.
It's just so unlike what we see in WWE nowadays.
Yeah.
It seems so. Well, you said it. It's out of place. It's just weird on this show.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say, I mean, it's not really good, but I really did think they were going to do more with Glenn Beck considering all the freaking press releases they sent and all the publicity they tried to get. I mean, they mentioned, Zeb Coulter mentioned him to, like, zero reaction. And then Michael Cole talked about, I went to his headquarters and he wouldn't. I mean, that was like a, that was like the lowest of the grandstand plays there is. You know, he was a chicken. He was afraid to, to talk to her, whatever. So
that video, by the way, is on the front page.
Yeah.
And Michael Cole's good. He's, he's like a real, he was a real reporter. And
oh, yeah, absolutely. Before he was in.
Yeah, he goes in there and he half plays it straight, but also is like, He's a witty guy. He's a funny guy when he's not being an annoying wrestling commentator. And it's actually a really funny video, so you can head up there and check it out on the front page. But yeah, no Glenn Beck here. So they go back and forth, and Del Rio is defending America. And
the one thing we should mention is it's very clear that there's not going to be any. They're not going to be any suspension or anything like that for Swagger.
No. He's right there, right in the thick of things.
Yeah, everything that happened, you know, clearly saved him.
So the challenge was made. Del Rio wanted a fight tonight, and Zeb and Jack bailed. Jack said, we'll do this at WrestleMania. So then they said, we the people, and that was that. I thought that, like... As far as, like, delivery, obviously Zeb did a fantastic job, and I thought for his end, I thought Ricardo was fine. He didn't blow
Ricardo
me away or anything like that, but...
Like, make faces.
I'm sorry, not Ricardo, Alberto. Alberto was... is fine.
He was okay. I mean, I thought he was a little bit weak, but the way it was scripted hurt him in the sense that he had to sit there forever. And for when a babyface has to sit there forever while being insulted without doing any moves, it kind of hurts anyway. But yeah, he was all right. But I just thought that some of the parts of the segment were just it felt very long, and felt very out of place, and it felt like that they thought they had something really really hot. And if you know, I thought that in you know, Dallas, Texas, it would be hot. You know, I mean, there are other places where I didn't think it would be hot, but this was one of them, and it really wasn't. It just kind of, it felt like it dragged.
So they showed a clip after commercial from the WWE Active, the WWE app where you can watch stuff during the breaks, and it was Zeb coming back out and yelling at Miz for being an unprofessional host. And Miz is mocking him, and then Jack Swagger ran up behind and rabbit lariated him right in the back of the head to set up a match for later on in the evening. Next week is Old School Raw. So, shock of all shocks, they're going to bring a bunch of guys back.
Which and by Undertaker.
Seem to be doing about once a month, actually. That's right. That would be a good return for the
old
Undertaker.
School. I heard Flair was coming back any week now, so I figured that the thing is you know, I think they had clips, and the only people on the clips that they showed, they had Gene Okerlund's voice, and they showed a clip of Flair, Dusty, and Ted DiBiase, I think. So they
all will likely be there.
Well, they're all, you know, they're all people who would, you know, I mean, they're not going to show a clip of people who aren't people who they might bring. So yeah, I mean, they all very well may be there. And I figure it's Undertaker. I was very surprised, you know, on the show that they showed a clip of Undertaker, and they said that he was at the house show in Waco, and you know, all but, you know, I just thought that, like, when he was going to debut, they would do the big surprise, and it would have been on this show. And for whatever reason, they decided to introduce him back in a, you know, by just showing a clip of his entrance from Saturday night and not showing him at all on the show tonight.
We had the Randy Orton and Tony Cesaro match. I think they got time cut. It just looked that way. Match was quick. Orton hit him with an RKO. Cesaro was coming off the ropes for a flying clothesline. Good finish. And Orton kind of, they didn't play it up big, but he sort of looked up towards the WrestleMania logo. So I don't know. Maybe they're doing Orton versus Cesaro for the title at WrestleMania. I guess we'll find out.
Didn't do commentary in that direction at all.
No.
And I don't see Orton challenging Cesaro.
They haven't done anything in any direction for Randy Orton at all.
There's no direction for anyone in the undercard. And I actually asked, and I was told that, you know, they really don't have any direction for most of these guys. It's not like it looks like it. They just don't. But yeah, Orton, Cesaro, I mean, they've had matches before that were pretty good, and this one was not their fault. They didn't have much time, but there wasn't much to the match at all.
Segment backstage with Daniel Bryan, Kane. Bryan said he could beat the primetime players all by himself with a blindfold on, and Kane said, well, I could do with a one-arm tied behind my back. So Vicky and Brad Maddox appeared. The gimmick is every time she tries to talk, he just steps all over her, and he has his idea. And they ended up with Daniel Bryan and Kane versus primetime players. Bryan's blindfolded. Kane has to have one arm tied behind his back. And I think Brad called them Bricky?
Team Bricky for Brad and Vicky.
Bricky.
Bricky, yeah.
There you go, everyone.
Ben and Jennifer, you know. Me and you'd be Team Brave.
Hey, that's not a bad one. Did you just come up with that, or have you been thinking about that all night?
Just came up with it.
I guess it's better than dying.
Yeah, it's much better.
We had the video from WrestleMania 21 of Cena and JBL recreating A Few Good Men. And I haven't seen that clip in many years, but they did a hell of a job.
That was really good. Yeah.
I mean, hell of a job.
Yeah.
Sheamus came out in a tux. The ring had the red canvas on. He showed a clip of Wade Barrett appearing very briefly in Dead Man Down. He made fun of him.
Briefly, they showed the spot of Wade Barrett in the trailer, which was him in the background.
Out of focus.
For a split second. Out of focus, yeah.
So
it was kind of amusing for a second, but they built a whole segment around it.
Went on and on and on. Wade finally came out smiling. He said Sheamus was clearly jealous. He was going to go to the red carpet premiere tomorrow, where Sheamus was just going to go drink, which Sheamus revealed, in fact, that was his plan, and that's exactly what was going to happen tomorrow. They got into a quick...
She's going to Oklahoma City tomorrow.
Well, I'm sure there's a bar along the way. Wade tried a clothesline. Sheamus ducked, went for a brogue kick. Wade bailed outside. They smiled at each other. And then Sheamus celebrated, and this made Wade very upset. So there you go. Looks like that's the WrestleMania match.
I don't know.
Actually, I shouldn't say that because he also got involved later with The Shield. So maybe that's just a TV
match. I don't think
match.
It's going to be a WrestleMania match. I think it was just a segment to promote the fact that that movie premiere is on. And I just don't see, you know, I mean, they've wrestled a lot on TV, and it's an okay match and all that, but I just don't see Sheamus being put with Wade Barrett at WrestleMania. He could be put with The Shield. That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, last week the plan was for Mark Henry, so... and Mark Henry obviously is going to, you know, he's being groomed for somebody big, and Sheamus is at least, you know, a big-time babyface, so...
I know it doesn't matter at all, this undercard, because you've got a big main event. You've got Brock versus Hunter... And Undertaker versus Punk, probably, but it's about high time we got some undercard matches here, or at least a direction.
It's about time you start building directions, yes, but they don't have it. I mean, there's your answer. I mean, that's why.
Which is funny, because like we had a pretty decent card many months back, and that appears it's all out the window.
Who knows? I mean, when we find out, it may end up being that card. Who knows? A lot of the stuff, I don't know. Like, if they are doing, like, Sheamus and Mark Henry, though, there's no reason that they didn't start teasing it now. I mean, some of the ones that they can't tease, I mean, like with Jericho, because Jericho's out for, you know, he's out this week. I think he's going to be back in either next week or the week after. And, boy, they promoted Jericho's TV show starts tomorrow night.
They did promote
Robot
it.
Combat League.
They did promote it.
Probed the hell out of it.
So that was amazing.
Yeah.
We had R-Truth pinning Cody with Damian Sandow doing commentary. I expected more from Sandow. I was kind of sad. But apparently
He didn't have a lot of time, and he really had no ideas at
no.
all. I mean, he just seriously just sitting there with nothing. I guess they're going to do, as a TV match, you know, R-Truth and Kofi Kingston against Rhodes and Sandow. I mean, it's kind of been building to that, but... maybe for next week or something.
We had the Team Hell No versus Primetime Players match with Daniel Bryan blindfolded. Kane had his arm, I guess, tied behind his back.
Kind of to his side more, right?
Well, it started behind the back, but it sort of crept over there to the side. I always love the, how do you tie a dude's arm behind his back? Seems like you'd need like somebody who was... I don't know, worked at Boeing or something like that to actually get this accomplished. This referee just sort of tied a knot around his waist and his hand, and it was a very unsuccessful attempt to tie a man's hand behind his back. But Kane won with one arm tied behind his back.
Darren Young. You know, Darren excuse me. I don't know. Darren Young was supposed to be out for a while.
So I asked, and I was told that he appears to be hurt, even though he worked tonight.
He's got a bad knee.
Yeah.
He's got a bad knee, and he was supposed to be out for, I mean, not a long time, but a couple of months.
Yeah.
A couple of months.
So I don't know what the deal was here, but it was certainly surprising to see him on TV.
Yeah, I was very surprised. Maybe he's, I don't have an explanation. I will ask, actually, as far as like what the deal was. But that was the company's medical thing, was that he was going to be out for a couple months. You know, probably minor surgery or something.
We had, maybe it's just something that's been bothering him and he could still work, but he has to get the surgery and then he'll be out.
Yeah, but if that was the case, why has he been out for the last 3 weeks? Why didn't he get the surgery 3 weeks ago?
That I cannot answer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe he was supposed to get the surgery and decided that he wasn't going to take that much time off because he's on a roll.
You know, he's on a hell of a roll.
I'm half facetious, but I'm half not, in the sense that, you know, these guys that don't have a TV role, you know, mentally, you know, they've seen, how many times have you seen guys where you're getting a little bit of a push, especially, you know, guys at his level, getting a little bit of a push, they get hurt, they come back, and I mean, they're just freaking doomed. So it could be that, where he's just going like, oh my God, you know, Titus is going to go his own way if I'm not around, and then without him, where am I? And, you know, maybe my knee's not hurting that bad. I don't know. Or maybe he's getting surgery in 3 days. But if that, you know, but I'll find out. But I've seen that happen too, where there's that, you know, there's that mental pressure. Because I don't think that he is in a situation. I mean, there are guys, absolutely, no matter what, you know, they try to say publicly, that are hurt and they are mentally pressured to come back way early. And it happens all the time when you're a top guy. But I just think for Darren Young, I can't imagine then, you know, why anyone from the company would want him not to come back early or to come back too early or whatever. But there he was. So there's, you know, so I think it's probably was his choice for whatever reason that he didn't want to, you know, maybe he didn't want to be out because he thought that he would, you know, the ship would sail by without him. And he was afraid of that, perhaps.
Had the Shield interview, came out, talked about how awesome they were, beat everybody, challenged anybody, said they were going to run roughshod over this company. I thought Seth Rollins actually did a hell of a job on the mic. He did.
They all did.
Yeah.
For what they were supposed to do.
Yep.
They were all good.
So they're doing this challenge, and Sheamus comes out, and he actually just serves as a distraction for Orton to run in and lay out Rollins with the RKO, so I don't even want to speculate anymore. Looks like they're doing something.
Well, if nothing else, they're doing something for TV with Sheamus and Orton and the third guy, which would probably be Ryback or Jericho, I would guess. And maybe they'll do something, you know, coming off of that with Ryback and Jericho.
Maybe they could do a Randy Orton turn joining the Shield on TV. And set up an eight-man.
And then go with Sheamus and Randy Orton.
Or an eight-man. Get everybody on the card for Mania.
A lot of ways they could go. Just got to figure out which way they're going.
Miz and Jack Swagger. It was a match.
It was okay. I mean, it was okay.
Swagger submitted him with the ankle lock.
Yeah, he did a good job with that bump. He took a bump where he got his left
this is
leg.
Miz.
Tangled up in the ropes, and then Swagger, I think, gave him a chop lock, and then the ankle lock. Swagger gave him a belly-to-belly on the floor, so yeah.
We had a baffling segment where they were doing a product placement plug for
with the chicken.
Sonic Chicken and sweet potato nuggets, I believe they called them.
Something like that, I don't know.
And fed it all to Lawler, the guy that had a heart attack last year.
Yeah. Well, but Lawler doesn't watch what he eats much. I mean, well, he does to a degree, but...
Does better now.
What?
Does better now.
Better, you know, his better, it's like his better is like that equivalent of a wrestler being clean. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, he doesn't do any drugs, and actually, well, all he does is painkillers and steroids. That's not really drugs, you know. With Jerry, I mean, you know, Jerry's down to, you know.
Wait a second. I think people are going to misconstrue what you just said right there.
What?
Jerry, people will misconstrue what you just said right there.
Oh, what, the Jerry's doing painkillers and drugs?
And steroids.
Yeah, Jerry's not doing steroids, no. But no, I've just been told, like, so many times, like, you're told, oh, you know, this guy is, you know, he's clean now. And then you find out that he's doing, you know, painkillers and, you know, a lot of painkillers and a lot of steroids. But that's clean, you know, because...
But he's not doing meth, so he's clean.
Exactly, exactly. You know, he's not loaded all the time. He's just doing enough to get by. That's clean. But in this case, you know, Jerry... You know, Jerry's down to fried chicken, you know, for one dinner a week instead of five. So it's an improvement.
That's an improvement.
Yeah, it is. I mean, well, Jerry, you know, Jerry would go and, you know, he ate whatever he wanted for the most part. I remember that there was a time where Jerry got a little bit heavy for himself. He had the belly and everything. And he did go on a diet, and he did get down to a, you know, I don't know, maybe 210 or something like that. So he did one. I just remember him once going on a diet, you know, which was that he wasn't eating so much rich food and thing, you know, and as many restaurant meals and things like that. But for the most part, Jerry has eaten whatever he wanted, which is that's the deal, you know, and never gone to the gym and you know things like that. That's him. I mean, it's funny because he's never done, you know, he's never trained like most wrestlers do. He's never eaten good like some wrestlers eat good. But on the flip side, you know, he doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, doesn't do drugs. Really doesn't do drugs. I mean, like, that's a real one. That's not, like, a fake one. So, yeah, you know, that's Jerry Lawler.
We had some touts. They're back. What
oh,
fans
brutal.
Thought about
brutal.
Triple H and Brock. And they alerted us that Triple H is now on Twitter.
Yeah, it's nice.
You sound thrilled.
No, I mean, it's fine. He should be. I mean,
maybe he's got some great insights.
He's got to build up a match. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he does. I don't think he's going to give it to us on Twitter, though.
You never know. You never know.
He's
new on Twitter. He may be tweeting text messages before you know it.
Yeah, okay.
You accidentally hit the wrong button, you know?
That's possible.
Wouldn't be the first time.
No.
As noted, Undertaker's entrance aired, and
yeah, they all but told you he's coming back for WrestleMania.
But
I would have thought he would come back with an angle instead of just the way that they did that. It was so.
There could still be an angle.
Yeah, but there's no surprise element. Everyone knows it's coming, which I guess there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, you know, one of the things, you know, in that first segment, because actually I should bring this up, the first segment of the show was absolutely. Completely predictable. You know what I mean? If I'm sitting there going like, what are you going to do? Everyone knew this was a setup for the angle. Everyone figured that, you know, Brock would run in on Vince, you know, and he didn't take out Vince, which I guess is probably smart because of Vince's, you know, Vince just coming off of surgery. And then Triple H would come in and they would do a big brawl. And it was perfect. It's like sometimes, you know, just the most obvious way to do something.
I'd say oftentimes.
Yeah, you know what? You know, realistically, 90% of the time, the obvious way is the best way. Every now and then, you do want surprises, but you don't want to surprise yourself out of money. You know what I mean? Like, if there's an obvious way that makes the most sense, or something that makes the most sense, then you should just do it, as opposed to, well, we've figured this out, so, you know, I mean, it's like, this is so obvious. It's like, well, if it's the obvious thing to do, then that's what you should do. So, I mean, I thought that the opening segment was the perfect example. Now, with Undertaker, I figured the obvious thing to do was, you know, get him involved in the main event on this match, but they didn't do that. But, I mean, the obvious thing to do is do something where he does something to Punk, so Punk has motivation to go after him and have him, you know, do the surprise on TV. Instead, the surprise was in Waco, Texas. They got the word out. And, you know, mentioned it on TV. So now everyone knows he's going to be back for Mania. But now I don't know. I mean, there's nothing, depending again on what they do for the angle next week or whenever it is. And I presume it is next week. That's fine. But, I don't, I don't know why. I don't know why they needed to do this, because it's like you do, you know, it's like the element of the introduction was so nothing, when I thought the element of the introduction should be, you know, a big part of his return.
It's led us to the John Cena CM Punk match. Had a hell of a match. Story was, obviously, they both wanted this WrestleMania match, kicked out of everything, including the return of the banned pile driver.
Oh, they're both in trouble, by the way. Vince was furious at all involved, because, you know, the pile driver is legitimately banned, especially that version. And I haven't gotten all the details. I just heard that Vince blew a stack. And, you know, I mean, again, given who did it and everything, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, maybe they'll just, you know, the agent will get in trouble, because, you know, what are they going to do? You know, they're not going to do anything to the guys. But that was not supposed to happen. In Vince's mind, it wasn't supposed to happen. Obviously, they were both on that page, and, you know, they decided to do it. It was an interesting spot. I mean, but,
yeah. So a lot of submission attempts back and forth, a lot of transitions, STFU into the Anaconda Vice, into a crossface, that sort of thing. And finally, Punk went for a flying elbow, missed. John Cena did his trademarked ugliest hurricane run of all time, followed up with the AA for the pin. And excellent, excellent match. Best match so far this year on Raw. Maybe the best match all year on Raw, and
well, this is so far this, you know, but it's the best match on Raw in a long, long time. But part of it also is because they gave the guys, you know, 27 minutes, and, you know, how often do you get that? I mean, I can't even remember the last time there was a match that long on Raw. I mean, you have to go back, God knows how long. I mean, I remember the Cena Shawn match, but geez, that's like 6 years ago, right? The England match. How many years ago was that match? 5-6 years ago?
I don't even remember.
I mean, that was a long time ago.
I remember they had like a Triple H Shawn match in San Antonio that went forever.
Yeah, well, that was like 10 years ago, though.
That match was awesome.
That match was awesome. That was better than this one. But this one, you know, I mean, I thought this was like a 4.5-star match, though. This match was really, really good. It wasn't as well wrestled as like a New Japan, you know, Tanahashi main event.
April 23, 2007.
So I was got the year right. Cena and Shawn?
Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was, yeah, because it was the tour right after WrestleMania that year, yeah. Yeah, they went like 53 minutes or 55 minutes, some number like that. And in some ways, I thought this match might have been better than that one even. This match was really good. But comparison to, it wasn't as well wrestled as a Tanahashi main event, but it was still, I mean, from excitement level, I thought it was right there with it. I mean, it was right there with Tanahashi Okada. I think it was below Tanahashi Anderson. I think Tanahashi Anderson had, yeah, it was below that for sure. But it's one of the better matches I've seen, you know, that I've seen this year. Top three probably. I don't know, maybe it's, well, I don't know. If I compare it to like the Sakuraba match on the January 4th, that's like so different. I don't know how to compare it, but it wasn't as outstanding as the Sakuraba Nakamura match, in the sense of the Sakuraba Nakamura match. When I watch that, there's like spots where you just go, "Oh my fucking god!" And you never did that here, but this was still really, it's still one of the best matches so far this year.
So that was Raw, everybody, and next week, I guess we'll set up that Undertaker match. Maybe they felt that two big matches set up on one show was overkill, since they have 6 weeks left until WrestleMania.
I can get that, you know, so. Like, you know, the whole thing. I wonder about doing the thing in the first segment, but I guess, there's nothing particularly wrong with it, and the reality is that I would bet that the first segment ends up being the highest-rated segment of the whole show anyway.
Pretty good bet. I think the main event might have done fairly well.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think the main event probably did all right, but, you know, the last couple of weeks, and especially last week, they really lost a lot of viewers as the show went on. And, in theory, the main event should be the highest rated segment, and it is possible that it will be. but they've been, you know, they've been losing a lot of viewers. Whereas the first segment, the last couple of weeks, the first segment's been the highest segment, and this first segment was a lot bigger first segment than any of those that was. So, I can get, like, normal mentality is, God, you don't put your killer segment first. You put it where the largest audience would be, but that's actually first. Kind of weird.
All right, let's do some news notes here. Tell us about Cyclone Negro, who just passed away.
Cyclone Negro. You know, I've been on the phone with people about Cyclone Negro during the, you know, today, because he was, I don't want to say he was before my time because he wasn't, but I never really, it was weird. It's like, of all the places I was and saw and everything, I never really saw him much at all. I heard about him. I know that he worked here about a year before I started, not even a year. I mean, like probably 3 months before I started watching and going to matches. Cyclone Negro had just left the territory, and people were talking about him. And I mean, everything I heard about him as a worker was that he was really, really good. And the people who I talked with today is like, you know, he was a fantastic bump taker in the 60s. And he was a main eventer. I can't tell you if he was a good promo or not, but he headlined everywhere. And he was huge in West Texas. I mean, he was, if you talk about the number one heel in West Texas from, you know, from probably the death of Mike DiBiase and you know, those type of guys after them, it would be Cyclone Negro, or Cyclone Negro was actually what they called him out here. And, you know, his matches, like he when he beat Dory Funk Sr. for King of the Death matches, that was like a, not for King of the Death matches, but, well, I guess it was, you know, Dory Funk Sr. was the King of the Death matches. Dory Funk Sr., they did the thing where he never, ever lost a Texas Death match. It's like Wahoo never lost a strap match. You know, Undertaker never lost at WrestleMania, type of thing. And then Cyclone Negro beat Dory Sr. in a death match in Amarillo after a big build-up. I mean, they built this match up for a long time. It was like this big thing. And Luthez was the referee and everything. And from that point on, it's like, you know, he beat Terry. He probably beat Dory Jr. at some point. I'm sure he did. But he beat Dory Sr. in a Texas Death match. And he was on top as the big rival of the Funks for forever. You know, he was in that territory, I mean, on and off. You know, he was a pretty big star in Japan, if you'd read The Destroyer in Japan, as Cribs Hurricane under a mask. He was a former boxer, and a fairly good amateur boxer, and, you know, they used that as part of his gimmick. He had the hard head gimmick, iron headbutts and things like that, because he would do the stunts where they would break boards over his head. I seem to remember being told, I did not see this, because even before I was a fan, but there was always a story about how, you know, when I started, it was Pat Patterson and Billy Graham against Ray Stevens and Peter Maivia, was the big main event tag team feud. And Billy Graham actually took the spot when Cyclone Negro or Cyclone Negro left the territory. And there was a spot where, you know, Cyclone Negro was the guy where they would do the stuff where they would break stuff over his head. You know, like a board, you know, boards or you know, hit him over the head with a sledgehammer. He would no sell it because he had this Fujita skull that was super, super thick. And they did some stunt where it was like, you know, one of those, they would do the stunts, you know, where they would do that. And then there was one time where, I don't know if, I think Pat Patterson, like, was supposed to break a board over Cyclone Negro's head. And something happened, and, you know, somebody said, the announcer said something, I don't know if it was Walt Harris or Hank Renner or whatever, whoever it was, said something or did something, and Patterson did it. And so he does the stunt, and you know that, like, the guy's going to no-sell it, and he knocked the guy out. And it was planned. You know, it wasn't like he actually knocked the guy out. But he knocked the guy out, and Pat Patterson just went crazy about, see what you made me do? I knocked out my partner and this and that. So that was something that, like, when I was a kid, that was the Pat Patterson knocking out Cyclone Negro with the boards or whatever was something that was, like, talked about in the schoolyard. I do remember that much. That was a pretty famous segment. But he was, you know, he feuded with Dusty, he feuded with Jack Briscoe in Florida, he feuded with, you know, Baba, and in fact, he had he had one of Baba's greatest matches ever in Japan. He had a great match with Gene Kaniski in Japan, with Destroyer, with Michiaki Yoshimura. That was a pretty famous match over there. I think they did a 45-minute draw on like a big TV card. Was in Australia. You know, he was a champ. You know, champion in Australia. He was one of the most underrated wrestlers in the sense that people don't remember his name, but he was, you know, a 20-year main eventer. I mean, he main evented here, you know, in L.A. after, but this is when L.A. got so crummy, and I just don't, and he was old by then anyway, so I don't like have vivid memories of him at all as a wrestler, even though he was around in the 70s, because whatever, when we would get Texas wrestling, he wasn't in Texas at the time. When I would go to Florida, he wasn't in Florida at the time. I mean, he was in all those places, but I just never, you know, he's in Puerto Rico. He feuded with Carlos Colon in Puerto Rico. I mean, he kept going. I think he was in Puerto Rico till like late, you know, till 88 or so, still as a headliner doing, you know, the blood stuff. You know, timing in the ring, really, really good. But what I do remember is you know, the reputation, timing in the ring, great bump taker. I don't know if he was a good promo or not, but whatever it was, he was a big time draw in the, as a heel against the Funk family in the Amarillo territory. I mean, the biggest one that they probably had as far as a rivalry, you know, from, you know, during the 70s.
Couple of MMA notes. We've got a fight. It's taking place apparently in August. Jose 3rd. Aldo and Anthony Pettis. Despite all those claims he didn't want the fight, he's taking the fight. And there's a stipulation, apparently, that if Jose Aldo wins, he will become the number one contender at 155.
He will get a shot. His next fight, if he wins this fight, he will get a shot at whoever the champion is at lightweight. He will move up and go for the championship, which is really screwed for these guys like Ricardo Lamas, because it's like they're going to be sitting there forever. And there's some talk that maybe Barao would, if he moves up, then Barao would move up, which if that was the case, then you got Faber and Cruz. You know, but Barao would probably still, I think they'll still do Barao and Cruz because they'll just do that match. But after that, I mean, if Barao moves up, then they'll, you know, then they could probably slide Faber in there if Faber keeps winning.
So does he have to vacate 145 before he gets a title shot, or if he wins, does he vacate?
I don't know. It's funny because I talked to Dana tonight, and the impression I had was that he would not vacate the championship, that he would get a championship match so he could go back and be champion if he was to lose it. But he was, you know, he was expecting that he would win the heavier weight championship. So that was the deal, to get him to agree to the match that he had agreed to and then said he wouldn't do it. And that was the deal.
And finally, what do we got in terms of early estimates for the Rousey show?
Yeah, over 400,000. It did, you know, they're absolutely thrilled. The show, you know, it was, they had predicted 250. Budgeted 250. I shouldn't say predicted. But I mean, the predictions internally were 250 to 300. So, I mean, they blew away their expectations big time with that. You know, it's not as big as I've seen some numbers floating around. It wasn't that big. But, you know, I mean, if you think about what it, you know, all things considered, it was enormous. It was a huge success. The reality is that it was probably there's a very good chance that this promotion of Ronda Rousey, was too successful for its own good, because she's been offered a role in the next, whatever it is, the next Hunger Games movie that they're going to film. And once that happens, it's like, you know, who knows? I mean, she's making a lot of money fighting. She, you know, I don't know what those numbers are going to come out to, but, you know, when they are released, but she's making a ton of money. I mean, they signed her to a hell of a contract because they really did believe that, not necessarily that she would be this giant pay-per-view draw, you know, or anything like that, but that in other ways she would be incredibly valuable to the company. And she so far has turned out to be more valuable than they expected. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that they're all going to happen at once. just due to this big publicity thing and everything. But, you know, one of them is, again, I mean, we all knew it was. We all knew that the destination for her was going to probably end up being in the movies. Whether she'll be successful at it or not, I don't know. But she's going to be, she's going to have the chance to be there. It was just almost a natural thing. And but it's bigger in that sense bigger and quicker than perhaps, not even than perhaps. It's bigger and quicker than would be what perhaps UFC would want, in the sense of. I think it's cool that they do that, but I think that they would want it, you know, something where, you know, she doesn't miss any dates, and it's not, you know, she might do some TVs or something like that, but not to, you know, get in the way of her training and not to keep her from being hungry. And, you know, you start doing movies, I mean, it's the, you know, movies is often, for fighters, it's the kiss of death, because you just get pampered and things like that, and it's hard to go from, you know, switch off and then go back to training. There are guys who've done it, but you know, as many guys that have done it and come back, very often their fighting career suffers. So it's going to be the narrative. It's like, you know, schedule-wise. Because, I mean, as far as, like, when she's fighting next, you know, all of a sudden, it's you know, there's all kinds of things from a schedule standpoint. It's not like UFC's, you know, call, like, okay, we want her on this card. There's going to be all kinds of things thrown her way, you know, filmings and things like that, you know, it's going to get tricky, but it's, I mean, it's, she got big in a hurry, which sounded like it was really good and is really good, but that's what's happening. But, I will say this, the Liz Carmouche is probably right now the happiest person ever to lose in the first round in a UFC championship match ever 2 days later, because that show, I mean, you know, the way that show did, and she is, you know, I mean, it was the Ronda show, but Liz Carmouche, they love her. They love her, you know, all the work she did with the media. And Liz Carmouche is making. You would be stunned at how much money Liz Carmouche made for this.
Actually, fight. I don't know how much she made, but on Saturday night, I thought for sure she was making $1 million.
No. She's not making $1 million.
Not that much.
No. Not even close. But she's making a lot of money though. She's making a lot. I'm sure she's making a lot.
I don't mean making $1 million like they're going to give her $1 million a fight, but I'm just talking. I thought the show was going to do a little better than 400. I thought.
It will do. It will end up doing better than 400. You know, it'll do better than 400. It'll do. It's hard to say because they're expecting big replay buys. But big replay buys, that actually means like, you know, maybe 25,000-30,000 more buys than they have now. So. I mean, it can do, mid fours, maybe more, maybe, you know. I mean, it could do more than mid fours. I mean, but that's a nice number to say. Put it that way.
I just thought that I just saw it. I saw it going down. I thought this is a big money show, and they're gonna bonus the hell out of this half of the main event.
Out of them, but not $1 million. But the thing on. Was going to say, I mean, the interesting thing is in, you know, the bar stuff, you know, the bar stuff was through the roof, and the pay-per-view, I mean, the pay-per-view was good. It beat the hell out of the last show. It did not beat the Kane show with the Kane Jr. December show. But realistically, it did John Jones numbers, and that's pretty impressive for a women's fight. I mean, and probably if, I don't think that her numbers are going to drop. I mean, some people think, oh, it's a one-time thing, and, you know, now it's going to go back and it's not going to draw, but I think those people are the last vestiges of the ones, you know, hanging on to the fact that it's this thing's a failure and it's a bad idea. I really think that her numbers are going to probably be here. I actually think they're going to grow, and by the time that they get to the, you know, Sarah McMahon or Cyborg, you know, they're going to do pretty substantial numbers. She's going to be, I mean, she is now, you know, her and George are probably the two big draws in the company, you know, in a sense right now. Because again, because I mean, Anderson needs an opponent, to draw. Rashad needs an opponent to draw. John Jones, you know, I mean, put it this way. I don't know that John Jones and Machida, if they do that fight, will do. In fact, I would even go so far as to say that I think that John Jones and Machida, if they do that fight, will do less than this. If John Jones, and I don't know that Gustafson with John Jones will do as much as this either. You know, there are opponents. If Dan Henderson went against John Jones, I think that he would do better. Chael and John Jones, I think, will do better. But it depends on the opponent. You know, if she fought, you know, somebody the equivalent of Chael, she'd probably do better than John Jones did with Chael, but there's no female Chaels. So she did, you know, it was definitely a big success. And, yeah, but there's, yeah, it was like, you know, who'd have thought that it was too successful? I mean, that's what it's kind of turned out to be.
All right, everybody, we want to wrap it up for today. We're going to have a new back issue of The Observer up tomorrow. We've got two issues of the Observer out last week, and three, actually, if you count the back issue. New figure four, we got Brian Kendrick on figure four at LA tomorrow, so tons of stuff coming up. So check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.